This episode of Thinking Sideways is not brought to you by Hugs for Pugs. Instead, it's brought to you by Unexplained Mysteries. If you're a fan of our podcast, you probably enjoy mysteries, so you should definitely check out Unexplained Mysteries. Every week, the hosts explore the greatest mysteries of the past and present. From the building of Stonehenge to the subject of the Mona Lisa, there may not be a simple answer or explanation, just like us, but that doesn't mean there's nothing to talk about. Visit Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Spot, basically anywhere you can find them. Definitely Parcasts, and it's Unexplained Mysteries. You know how to spell Unexplained Mysteries. That's probably how you found us. You searched Unexplained Mysteries Podcasts. Do the same thing, except for put Parcast, P-A-R, cast, and you'll find them. This episode is also brought to you by the audiobook edition of The Wife Between Us by Greer Hendricks and Sarah Pekkanen. Hear the story listeners are calling wow, just wow, and one of the best audiobooks ever. Narrated by Julia Whelan, a twisty psychological suspense about a jealous wife is not what you think. Start listening now at macmillanaudio.com/wifebetweenus.
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of Thinking Sideways. I'm Joe, joined as always by
Steve
and
Devin.
And today, this week, we're going to talk about another unsolved mystery.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the unsolved murder from 1984 of Catherine da Costa. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm going to mispronounce every word, as I said before.
Oh, yeah.
It's a Swedish
mystery. I feel like any time, like, we get a lot of suggestions for Swedish or otherwise kind of that area mysteries, and every time I feel like it's just because people want to hear us struggle.
There's a lot of people who are very, very honestly willing to help us.
They are.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it doesn't help comes over much. The internet,
yeah,
and therefore
help.
It does not help us pronounce these words properly. Not
unless you're going to, like, send us actual audio files of you saying the words, it's not
and that barely works.
I know. Just as a small warning, there are some things that should be considered adult content, so viewer discretion is advised, and also listener discretion too.
Thank goodness, because the viewership is really low.
These people are staring at their iPods going, what the hell?
Actually, there are viewers. Listen, we are apparently on a run of this kind of story, because this is like the third or the fourth in a row.
I know.
Yeah, I hate to admit it, but stories like this are really easy.
Well, I'm telling you right now, next week, not going to have any warnings whatsoever.
That's
good.
It's
going to be the nicest, blandest story
ever. It's going to be wholesome.
Yeah, well, next week.
Or at least black and white.
Next week, the story is actually going to be about My Little Pony.
Don't even go there, though, because it gets the My Little Pony fandom gets a little whatever.
Oh, that's
anyway,
weird?
Sorry.
Okay, so let's start talking about the story.
Yeah, okay. All right.
All right, anyway, Joseph, what's going on here?
Oh, yeah. So, Catherine da Costa. She was... she was 28 years old when she vanished. That was June 10th, 1984, when she was last seen.
Mm-hmm.
She'd been drug addicted since high school, and was clear up to the end. Had a big problem with drugs, and so eventually,
specifically heroin.
Yeah, and eventually
that one's a rough one.
That sort of drove her into prostitution, and she was working at the time of her death in Stockholm, in an area of town that's called Malmskillesgatan. Which is like kind of this business district, apparently, that all the prostitutes and went to, and their drug dealing was going on. That kind of, apparently they've cleaned that all up, and it's and of course it's vanished completely. It's moved somewhere else. But
yeah.
That's what the neighborhood was called in that time. She moved around a little bit, struggled, as I said, with drugs. She moved to Portugal for a while, got married, had a kid. And then when she got back to Sweden, unfortunately, the child was taken away from her by social services. And by 1984, reportedly, her drug habit had gotten worse, which typically happens.
You know? They tend to get
cyclical.
Worse and worse.
Yeah, worse and worse. She had OD'd a few times. And she, of course, you need more drugs. That means you need more money. So she started taking on clients that the other women in the area would refuse. The guys who were the real sicko types, the violent ones and stuff. Yeah. So she tried it, started taking on a kind of riskier business.
It's always so sad, I feel like, when people get stuck in that cycle, you know.
It's kind of like,
is it their fault? Is it not their fault? Who knows? It's sad no matter what. So,
you know, obviously addiction's a big thing. It happens to the best of us. But, she probably would have been better off going into rehab, I think I can say.
Yeah.
It's an easier, yeah.
It is, but, you know, there's also, done, yeah, but, totally easier said but, than done.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's easy to say that. But, anyway, back to her disappearance. Apparently, she was last seen in Moms Keeley's Gotten on June 10th, getting out of a client's car. 5 weeks later, that would be mid-July 84, some of her body parts were found in a plastic bag in a suburb of Stockholm near what's called the Karolinska Institute. Which is like a hospital.
It's a medical institute, right?
Institute. Somewhere nearby there. And then 3 weeks after that would have been early August, another garbage bag of body parts was found less than a mile away. And so they've got most everything. They put her all back together, kind of, except for her head, which was never found.
There were some other bits.
I won't give you a detailed list.
Specific gender organs.
Areas.
Yeah, there's that. And also some of her internal organs were never found either.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure her being a heroin addict, I'm pretty sure they were not sold for transplants.
Probably not.
Yeah. But her hands luckily were intact, and so they were able to ID her through her fingerprints.
Organs that were missing, were they the kind that you would transplant normally?
I have no idea what organs were gone, to be honest with you.
I thought it was intestines. Which we just learned, apparently, that's like a thing, but probably not.
It can be transplanted after all.
You know, a murder. But
yeah.
I thought it was just kind of these weird, innocuous, like, why would they be missing organs? But maybe not.
I don't really know.
Okay.
That's a good question. I mean, in the whole dissection thing, there's probably, when you're busy cutting up the body, there's certain things that just sort of, and this is going to be gross, but probably just sort of fall out. And so, although at the same time, that makes no sense, because you would think you just stuff them in the garbage bags you're stuffing everything else into, right?
Well, but some of the other body parts that were missing seemed like, I mean, that seems more like intentional trophies.
Yeah.
You know, as we're talking about, again, these like kind of bikini areas that were missing. That seems like a trophy keep for somebody versus, you know, the organs. So if you are, you know, just you've got some stuff in a pile over there, maybe that just slipped in.
I don't know.
Or maybe
the guy had hogs. And I don't know.
But then you would just feed all of it to the hogs, wouldn't you?
You would, right?
They'll eat it all.
I mean,
hogs only eat the finest liver?
Yeah. And intestines and breast and whatever.
Right,
right.
Those bits.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, now that we've gotten through that. Oh, by the way, I wanted to thank Candace, who suggested this. I forgot.
Really, Candace?
Sorry, Candace. I should have said something earlier instead of waiting until we were right in the middle of all the gross parts. But I do thank you for suggesting it. And I'm sure a lot of our other Swedish listeners have probably mentioned it, too, at some point. So thanks to all of you, too. It's, as you all know, it's one thing to murder somebody, but it's, you know, when you start chopping them up into pieces, well, that gets people's attention, right?
Yeah.
That's another thing entirely.
Yeah, usually.
Some people would consider that to be beyond the pale.
Yep.
And so this became a really big case in Sweden. And if you live in Sweden, I'm sure you've heard of it. It's apparently one of their biggest unsolved mysteries.
Well, especially
the cutting up murder.
Yeah.
Especially in the, like, you know, mid-80s.
Yeah, I guess we're more used to that kind of stuff these days with the internet and TV.
More that this case happened in the mid-80s.
But it's still around.
People
still talk about it. Still writing about it. But as Steve said, it is called the cutting up murder. At least that's the sort of crude English translation of it.
There's some very long Swedish word.
Yeah. Their long words, don't they?
And the Germans, I feel.
The Germans really
just, like,
do.
Shove them all together.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I'm sorry, I might have missed it. You might have said it, but how were they able to identify the body?
Fingerprints.
Oh, so her hands were intact.
They did find the hands, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, they pieced it all together. Everything went together, and, it was all the same body and fingerprints, yeah.
And then the tabloid showed up, and thing got huge.
And it went, just went kind of crazy from there.
It inspire some famous books?
Yeah, supposedly, there are actually books written literally about this story. Documentaries were done, but also supposedly it's been claimed that a few famous Swedish writers like Stieg Larsson. You know, you're familiar with that guy. Was inspired
the
by
the girl with
crime.
The dragon tattoo.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I just recently saw the both versions of that movie.
Oh, I read the book. The book was good.
Yeah. I didn't
never
read
watched the movie.
I haven't gotten to either of those things. So.
Yeah, but yeah, there's a
somebody
Swedish...
wasn't doing their research.
Come on.
Yeah. Because that was a big part of it. You're right. Sorry.
Yeah. No. But actually, having seen both of those movies, I saw the original plus the Daniel Craig remake in English, and I consider myself to be an expert on Swedish society and culture.
You should.
Yeah, I totally do. Yeah.
I consider myself to be an expert on Swedish culture and society because I've gone to IKEA a couple times.
So, oh, there you go. You
know. I eat Swedish fish.
God, I'm so sorry to all of our Swedish listeners.
Yeah.
Okay, so where are we at here?
Well, you know, the one thing I noticed about IKEA, though, is that when you go there, you'll notice that Swedish furniture looks exactly like American furniture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just harder to put together.
Yeah. No, that's because I was going to say.
There's no words, that's why.
It's because American furniture is all IKEA. I mean, everybody I know has IKEA in their house. Oh, back to our story. As Steve said, the tabloids did go nuts over this. I was just showing Devin before we started recording a copy of one of the stories.
You'll find a picture of it on Instagram.
Yeah, it's an interesting take.
In 4 weeks.
Yeah.
So 4 weeks ago.
Yeah. When you listen to this.
Yeah. And of course, this case also became a big cause for the women's rights groups because Katrin became a symbol for the ill treatment of women in Swedish society. Which I can't really comment on because I've never been to Sweden.
But I would say there's some, not to like go on a political soapbox necessarily or anything, but I would say that yes, like there is a general lack of care for women who are put into situations like this, who particularly women who end up, you know, being in the sex working industry or sex trade. You know, there is that general kind of lack of, not in this room, certainly, but in society in general, lack of kind of care of their own safety.
Well, they make convenient targets. If you're a serial
killer, they sure do.
They're
handy. Yeah,
they're
often. And often, I mean, same with like women who are experiencing homelessness or anything like that. I mean, you know, women on the kind of fringe of society and men too, certainly less a little bit, but men and women on the fringes of society do tend to be easy victims.
Well, I was reading the other day some stat about, you know, sex workers in this type of situation, you know, actually being, I'm going to use the term streetwalker because that's put you in the most direct line of fire.
Sure, yeah.
But I was reading and I can't remember what the number was for the, you know, the percentage of likelihood of death.
It's insane.
But it was, I was like, that's not right.
It is.
And then I walked away and I'm standing and I'm like, that's a really big number.
It is.
It kind of is. It's like yet another reason to not go into that particular profession, I would say.
Yeah.
But unfortunately,
some
people feel like that's their only option. Again, certainly like drug addiction often plays into that. And,
there were certain societies like, you know, I mean, in Russia, after the big collapse in the economy, it went all to hell.
Yeah.
A lot of women turned to prostitution. You know, I mean, and we're talking like professional women started doing it and stuff. You know, it happens. But anyway, but I don't want to get down to the weeds.
Sorry. Yeah. I was going to say, I'm going to step off my soapbox now, but just say.
But the other controversy is, of course, the trial. There were two trials about this case.
Oh, there were?
Yeah, there were.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a couple of suspects were rustled up. They were put on trial for the murder. They were convicted, but the verdict was overturned, and that was that, except there was a huge outcry about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so they were put on trial again, and second time around they were acquitted. And so they went on just to lead their lives, except their lives are kind of destroyed. But I mean,
that's hard.
Not a happy ending, really.
I was
going
to say, like, a public campaign like this is almost impossible to overcome.
Yeah, and to get a fair hearing.
I mean, and even
trial.
Yeah, and even if it turns out that you are innocent, you know, there's kind of that guilty by public opinion situation that happens a lot these days, and it's kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, and
but also maybe sometimes okay.
Well, it just depends on if they were guilty or not. But I can say unequivocally, like having read a few of the tabloid stories about the murderers, if they were indeed murderers, that even if they were guilty, the stuff that was said about them in the tabloids was just totally
inflammatory,
beyond inflammatory. Things that were said, they were obviously not true. Yeah. I mean, obviously, they they were just, they'd made these people out to be vampires and, you know, mass murderers.
Literally. He's not
and
like
cannibals.
Yeah.
And, I mean,
no,
all,
but
oh, yeah.
Joe was like saying, like, truly, again, if you go look at our Instagram, not to push too much, there's this article that's just like, he was an actual vampire. Like, that was the claim that they were making.
Oh,
it wasn't
just
like they were making them out to be these, like,
crazy.
It wasn't figurative. They were saying it was literal.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so I could say that it's probably, you know, pretty hard to recover your reputation after something like that.
Yeah, apparently after somebody claims you're a vampire,
Yeah, but this is still hotly debated. A lot of people thought that they, and still think that they were guilty. You know, of course, the tabloids, but other people think they were railroaded. Well, anyway, let's take a look at the suspects here. We got a lot of theories about...
This is one of those weird ones where we have a very short intro because the story is so small.
Yeah.
But the theory section is the majority of it.
Yeah.
So
no, I mean...
Don't be confused here.
Yeah, no.
We're not breaking right now.
Short story? Nope, not yet. Yeah, okay. Here we go.
That's not it. It's like...
Oh, sorry. That was a wrong... I was doing the... What was it?
Phenomena.
Yep. That's the one I was doing. It's what I always do.
Okay. So we got the music out of the way?
Yep.
All right, cool.
Phenomena.
All right, let's look at theories here. Chupi. I haven't mentioned Chupi for a while.
You haven't?
No, so poor
I recently
guy.
Did a Bored at Work casual AMA on Twitter. You guys may or may not have seen this.
I had no, I did not.
One of the number one most asked questions was, what did Chupi ever do to Joe that he accuses him of, like, stuff all the time? And I was like, listen, nothing. Okay?
According to our response to the legal suit, nothing happened and nothing ever shall, and we shall not officially blame him for anything
ever
again.
Ever.
No. I will tell you what happened is...
he ate your goat?
Yeah, no.
He got your goat?
No, I don't think Chupi was involved.
No, it wasn't. No, it's not that at all. It's just, you know, when we're looking for a little filler, you know, we talk about Chupi. You know, no. But also, I just like his name, you know. He's got a cool name.
Chupi.
Yeah, Chupi. Yeah. Chupacabra.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I want to like this theory, and I do like this theory, but, well, okay. You know where I'm going here. Okay, it wasn't him.
How about the next one?
Well, next theory. There's another theory out there. I mean, it turns out that from the body parts collected, they were never actually able to establish a cause of death. So it's not...
There's no blatant bullet wound or stab wound or throttle marks,
you know,
or whatever.
Bludgeoning of the head.
Yeah,
or
but the hard part with that is, like, somebody cut off her head. Like, that could have been the cause of death.
That
could
have been.
They don't have the head.
They don't have the head.
So they don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, so somebody could have, there's so many different things that could have happened to her body because they cut it up afterwards. It's hard to tell what happened.
Yeah, I mean, so it
so technically, yes, they didn't have a cause of death.
Yeah, could be she died of an overdose and somebody decided to practice their dissection skills.
They were not very good at it.
Well,
actually, they were pretty good at it.
Some people, yeah.
They were
some,
really good at
medical
it.
Examiner
they got her
said,
into a bunch of little pieces.
Yeah,
medical examiner said that it looked professional. Another idea is that it was just somebody comes across a dead body and think, hey, this is what a great troll this will be. We'll chop the body up into bits, put it in garbage bags, and leave it distributed around town, and people will go nuts over it.
Yeah.
I kind of find that hard to believe, too.
Agree.
That's a pretty extreme troll, even for trolls.
I could picture somebody doing that, except for the part about getting thrown in prison for many years if you get busted for doing it.
Then listen, that's when it becomes serious. You always make this mistake of assuming that people think out the repercussions of their actions.
Yeah.
I mean, Logan Paul... thing.
Logan Paul?
Do you not know about this?
Now, which one is that?
He's a YouTube, quote-unquote YouTube sensation who thought it would be cool to go into the Japanese suicide forest and film a recently suicided body.
Oh, what a great idea.
Oh, no. I don't remember this, but I can only imagine how badly that
went. Oh, yeah. It went really, really bad.
And it did. How did the Japanese feel about that?
They're like, this is an atrocity.
Oh, really?
Like, you will never be allowed
back into
this country.
I mean, yeah, basically, they were like, we would love to prosecute you if America would extradite you, we'd love to prosecute you. And America was like, no. But this just happened.
Well,
and YouTube
didn't kill anybody,
No, he didn't kill anybody, but like...
It's a very poor taste.
But it's the same sort of thing, right? It's like profiting off of getting something off of a dead body.
Yeah.
Same thing as like kind of cutting up, I guess maybe not, but you know, almost the same thing as cutting up a dead body to just like get...
There's a bit of getting your jollies.
To not just get your jollies, but to just watch everybody else lose their heads over it, which is what happened. happened here.
Yeah.
But figuratively and literally.
Ooh, yeah. Rough.
So this is not...
That's a rough joke. It's,
yeah.
Listen,
yeah.
I didn't make the head and shoulders above the rest joke.
Oh, my God. Okay. Let's keep going.
So that's... We got to put that into the realm of the possible, but extremely unlikely.
Okay.
Yeah. But, super unlikely.
Yeah. And of course, Dungeons and Dragons.
No.
You know, those guys like their props.
No, not like this.
We've proven that that whole thing is not real.
No, Dungeons and Dragons players do like their props, but the only reason they really like their props is because you buy them and then you get to paint them yourselves.
And you collect them.
That's the whole fun of it.
And you catch them all.
Yeah. Okay.
That's how that works with Dungeons and Dragons, right?
It's okay. Let's keep going because I just don't
emails from this episode and
don't
we are
have the time. Yeah.
Yeah. No, we don't. But even though I consider it a possibility that she was not even murdered, she died of an overdose.
I think it's unlikely.
It does seem unlikely.
Yeah.
It seems very unlikely. But
so who's next?
If it did happen, whoever actually did it, you know, you could have come forward and says, "Hey, by the way, you're all overreacting and you're putting these guys on trial. I chopped the body up, but she was already dead." Of course, that guy didn't come forward and say that.
No.
You'd be out of your mind to do that. Well, let's move on to our next theory. This is an actual person whose name was Stanislav Gonerka, who was a Polish person, I think a Polish immigrant to Sweden.
And we're just going to call him Stan, right?
We are going to call him Stan.
Great, because I can't possibly try to pronounce that name.
I can pronounce it. I'll just pronounce it badly.
So it's his last name that's kind of a...
Stanislav. I just want to call him Stan.
Yeah, okay. Stanislav Gonerka. I don't know. But
Stan.
Yeah, we'll call him Stan. But Stan was a butcher by profession. He had been locked up in a mental institution for about 10 years because, well, in 1974, he murdered a young woman by strangling her.
Okay.
And then he cut her body up into small pieces and put it in garbage bags. And
very similar to
and the head was the Catherine, head was never found.
Or Katrine.
Katrine, yeah, it was. I think Katrine is the correct pronunciation. But
okay.
So this does sound like an awfully familiar MO. Don't you
it
think?
Does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Head was never found.
I'm sorry. Yeah. You may or may not have an answer to this question. Why was he put in a mental institution instead of jail?
I guess they must have decided maybe his attorney might have pleaded insanity.
Turns out that's not so common.
But it was in the 70s.
Even in the 70s.
And it's another country, and we don't know exactly how their system works. So.
I'll just say that it turns out the whole like insanity thing is not so common because
falls apart.
Well, either it falls apart or the sentence of insanity is like way worse.
Oh, yeah.
That's the problem. Yeah. It doesn't mean they just let you go. Because if you say
they put you in insane asylum, and then somehow you have to prove you're not insane, which is almost... Impossible.
That's hard. That's probably harder than convincing the parole board that you've reformed.
Oh, from day one saying, but I'm not insane. I'm not insane. For the next 40 years, you're going to
you
say
you guys
that
have heard that thing, right?
Oh,
there
was
the journalist.
Oh,
I'm sure that our listeners have heard this, but I'll just briefly, like, high level. There was a journalist at one point in, like, the late 1800s who was like, I just want to prove how corrupt the insane asylum industry is by getting myself a sane person committed to the insane asylum.
Oh, bad idea.
So she pretended to be insane, got committed, and then as soon as she was there, started like acting like a normal, totally sane person.
Uh-huh.
And they were like, no, you're still super insane. And kept her. It took like her publisher had to come in, like five different people had to come in. It was a very long process to get her out.
Not nearly as easy as she had hoped.
No, it turns out. Yeah. So
that was
don't do that, guys. Don't pretend to be insane to get admitted to a sane asylum.
But it's the whole, you know, in that whole thing, at least here in America, the due process component of it is a little better than it used to be. But in the old days, it used to be scarily easy to commit somebody.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Seriously.
That was a thing.
Especially women.
And they were,
especially women.
Yeah.
It was super easy to get women committed.
You were hysterical.
Yeah. Exactly. And so.
Because you were upset about something, you were hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh,
yeah.
Rough. Anyway, so he
tough
was,
times, but,
he
yeah.
spent time in
yeah, he was packed
psychiatric hospital
where
instead
he spent about
of
10 years. Instead of a prison.
Okay.
Although I imagine the psychiatric hospital wasn't much more fun than
and
prison.
10 years either place is probably pretty rough.
Probably sucks.
Yep.
Long time.
Yep.
So he got out in April 1984.
And I'm sorry, when was our victim murdered?
It's believed sometime after June 10th, 1984.
Great. Okay.
And I'm assuming the police seem to believe the murder took place very shortly after that. It must have been by the state of the parts that they
found. I would
assume,
yeah.
That they were able to establish that. But really, I mean, she could have been held somewhere for a week or so, or two, maybe. Yeah, even.
But you wouldn't. It's not easy to discern that the week or two's difference after that much time has elapsed, that the body parts have been
they've been all
sitting around.
I would imagine that. Yeah, I would imagine. And of course, I'm not an expert on this at all, but probably bodies deteriorate at a different rate when they're a whole body versus chopped up into small pieces.
I would assume.
You know, you would think.
It's crushed ice versus an entire block of ice.
Exactly. Oh,
I was going to say, it's more like, you know, wherever there is exposure, you're going to decompose.
Yeah, exposed surface area.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what the crushed ice block
of ice. Got it. Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. So. That makes sense now.
Yeah,
But put it in the gross context, it makes a whole lot more sense.
Anyway, Stan was, this kind of looks bad for Stan. I mean, it makes him look like a pretty good suspect, I would say. I mean, wouldn't you think? I mean, he gets out of like the mental institution and somebody dies right after that, just like the last one died. The police did take a look at him because he was, it turns out, a regular down there at the red light district. I already told you what it was called earlier, but it's so hard to pronounce.
All the red light words district.
He'd been seen there hanging out there in June 1984 when Catherine disappeared.
Okay.
He was known to the police as a dangerous person.
A violent person, maybe?
A violent, dangerous person, apparently. And according to Swedish newspapers, and this is not just the tabloids, but according to the newspapers, his name was found in Catherine's diary.
Oh, again with the diary.
The diary apparently was one of her coworkers or colleagues actually gave it to police. Apparently, it's disappeared now.
I'm just saying, like, in the last episode, we also talked about a diary being, like, the only thing that linked somebody to the crime.
Uh-huh.
So.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Hank.
I'm going to have to, like, start keeping a diary. Yeah.
Don't, please.
Dear diary, saw Stephen Devon again.
No, stop it.
Dear diary, it's weird. They keep coming back.
Dear diary, they joked about taking out a life insurance policy on me. Dear diary, we're going shooting with Devon and Steve tomorrow.
Gonna document all that stuff.
No.
What else about Stan? Police?
Not much, right?
Yeah, they ruled him out as a suspect pretty early on, and nobody seems to know why. I know, at least I've heard pretty conclusively, that he did not actually have an alibi for where he was at that time period. And so it wasn't the alibi, apparently, that ruled him out. So I'm not sure what exactly caused police to rule him out as a suspect.
I thought at one point, at least in the last decade or so, they had acquired skin samples. Does this sound correct to you?
Yeah, there's some tissue samples from
him. To try and conclusively prove that he wasn't involved. But that's one of those things. Here's the flash in the pan news report that never gets followed up on.
Yeah, the last I read about that was an article that was published in 2010.
Yeah,
as of that time, the issue was still up in the air as to whether these tissue samples that were taken after his death were conclusively or not conclusively linking him to the murder.
Right.
Nothing.
I feel like, since we don't really know how it is that he ended up in a psychiatric hospital versus a actual, like, jail. I almost wonder if that had a little bit to do with the police kind of dismissing him. I don't know.
Well, his problem was that he would get drunk and become super violent.
That was his
drunk. M.O.
Yeah.
And that appears to be what happened in 1974. And the girls in that area in 1984 appeared to recognize him, or at least to have suffered his behavior enough that they were shutting him out, is what I've seen in some places. Because, you know, you get out, you're free, let's celebrate. I get drunk, I get brutal.
Yeah.
Let's go find a girl and beat the holy crap out of her and have a good time. It appears to be what goes through his brain.
And word gets around among the sex workers, prostitutes, that
you stay away from
them. I think, you look out for your own, right?
You stay away from that John.
And
he'll
of course, as we know, Catherine was willing to take on that kind of rough trade because she was desperate for money. So I
don't really know, but I don't know. I tend to trust, however, like, for better or for worse, I tend to trust the police.
They must have had some reason, but One of the reasons I think they might have ruled him out is they might have found a better suspect.
Yeah. Or a couple better suspects.
And so it might well be that they didn't rule him out for great reasons so much as they just
pursued other suspects.
They found somebody they liked better, and so they just dropped Stan. And as for him, he died in 1987. As you said, Steve, they took some tissue samples before they buried him or cremated him or whatever they did.
Whatever they did with his body.
Yeah, and so those are still around. They might be helpful someday in solving the crime. So far, they haven't been. But anyway, we'll set him aside as a possible theory for our perp, and we'll move on to another perp here. But first, before we do that, let's take a break.
A Perfect Obsession, Life of Lies, The Executioner, Lie to Me, Marked for Revenge, The Coldest Fear, Race Against Time, The Ultimatum, Deep Graves, Hoodwinked Hearts.
I like that one.
If any of these titles sounded familiar to you or interesting to you, you might be a fan of Hanover Square Press titles. They are also the publisher of The Innocent Wife, an international best-selling novel by Amy Lloyd that tells the story of a young schoolteacher who falls in love with a man on death row whom she believes is falsely accused. 20 years ago, he was arrested for the murder of somebody in Florida's Red River County, but now he's the subject of a true crime documentary, you like those, that's taking the world by storm. The filmmakers are whipping up a frenzy to uncover the truth and free the victim of a gross miscarriage of justice. And though Samantha is 1,000 miles away in England, she is invested in his case as any of his lawyers. Perhaps more so, as her letters to the convicted killer grow more intimate. Ooh. After their marriage and his release, events begin to suggest that he may not be as innocent as it seems. A compelling tale of obsession, perfect for true crime addicts, The Innocent Wife is available now, wherever books are sold.
And we're back. Okay, our next theory or suspect, a man named Tiet Harm.
Ugh.
Yeah, great name, Harm, I know.
Is there an umlaut or is there...
There is an umlaut, so it's probably more like... Yeah, over the A, there's an umlaut. So under Swedish pronunciation rules, I have no idea what that is.
I have no idea.
Yeah, me either, sorry.
I have seen his name spelled so many ways I was unsure.
Yeah, so it might be Harm or Horm or something, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Probably not just Harm.
Probably not.
That's the way it's spelled and pronounced in English.
Yeah, in the English pronunciation. So let's talk about Mr.
We'll just call him Tiet Harm. Well, he was a forensic pathologist who was working at the Karolinska Institute. Name sounds familiar. That's near where the initial bag of body parts was found.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Stockholm. That was in, of course, 1984. The body parts, the second bag was actually found less than a mile away, as I said. And it turns out the Karolinska Institute was in between those two places. Bracketed by those two places.
Okay.
Yeah, and physically. And he was a consultant sometimes with the police on murders and suspicious deaths because his specialty...
He was a forensic pathologist, so that makes sense.
Yeah, a forensic pathologist. His specialty was death by strangulation.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, he was...
So we're kind of talking like a Dexter situation.
Yeah, kind of like that. Okay. Well, the tabloids try to make it out as kind of a Hannibal Lecter kind of situation,
okay.
Where he was like this... He totally helped the police solve crimes. He was brilliant and solved many, many murders. But it turned out, you know, he was...
Because he was constantly killing people
behind,
on his own.
Yeah, behind the scenes. He was busy slaughtering people left and right himself. According to the tabloids, not necessarily in real life.
I just realized I never finished Dexter.
Yeah. I didn't either. I stopped watching like mid.
I think I made it to like season. We've talked about this before.
It doesn't matter.
I'm sorry. That was just a train of thought.
No, I can tell you how it ends if you
That's
want.
Okay. That's okay. I don't need you
okay.
to.
No spoilers,
right, fine.
Thanks.
Okay. Well, anyway, just go back and watch it. Actually, what happens is he kills everybody.
Oh, okay.
And so that's about the end of it. Yeah.
And then analyzes their blood spatter.
Yeah. Yeah. Back to Tiet Harm, the fact that he had this sort of morbid specialty didn't really play well with the public, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what happened is that essentially somebody called the police after the body was found. It was all chopped up. Somebody called the police. It turns out it was his former father-in-law who called the police on him. Yeah. And suggested that he would be a viable suspect. And before that, he was not actually on the police's radar at all. The reason his father-in-law apparently had never liked him to begin with, but then his wife's name was Anne Catherine, and she died in 1982. She was found strangled to death in their bedroom.
Mm. Yeah. Well, not officially.
Yeah. Well, she was. She officially hanged herself.
Correct.
But as often happens with amateur hangings, people wind up strangling themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So death by asphyxiation.
If you do it right, you
snap the neck.
You snap your neck.
Yeah.
But if you don't, well, you choke to death.
Yeah.
You
know, which is horrible.
Yeah. Well, it definitely would prolong the situation for a bit. Yeah. So she was found hanging from the side of her bed with a cord around her neck. And it looked as though, one of the things that was odd about it is she was, according to the press, dressed up for a night out.
I'm sorry, hanging from the side of her bed?
Yeah. I think that this was not, you know, like the four-poster bed kind of thing is how I'm picturing this had to be. You know, something that had the tall corner posts and maybe even the crossbars up high, like that kind of bed.
It could have been that.
Like a princess bed.
A lot of suicides by hanging, too, they're actually not dangling over the ground. They're actually partly contacting the ground, even.
Right. Like, well, when we've talked about that, but yeah. I imagine that if she was in a situation where she didn't break her neck and she was, God, we've gone over this so many times. If she is, you know, she's strangling, any purchase is purchase. So I gotta feel that it was something that was above head height.
Right,
for
that's
her to
my
be
question.
Suspended
too, right?
From.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah. And
that or her husband killed her.
It could have been actually, because she was divorcing him, which is often considered a murder motive.
But what you said was, you know, everybody said, well, she was dressed up for a night on the town, but it is not uncommon for people to say, I would like to look my best
when
going
on my last day.
Sure. And put on all the makeup, do your hair up right, put on your best dress, and then kill yourself. Sure, absolutely. You know, but that did seem a little strange. And, of course, the papers printed that, which didn't look, things look so good for Tiet Harm. Police also said that his behavior at the time seemed a little callous, but you never know. I mean, they were divorcing. It might have been all the fun had gone out of the relationship. And so maybe he wasn't.
If he's a forensic pathologist, though, he is around death.
That's true too.
To have a thick enough skin to be around that kind of stuff all the time and have it not bother you, probably means that you have the equivalent of the British stiff upper lip. And so when it's your wife that dies, nobody knows what you're feeling because you are just putting on your work face.
I don't know. Just, I guess I would say, like, we're not, right, these forensic pathologists, we don't go see dead bodies all the time, but we talk about death a lot. But I would say that having a recent death and experiencing a recent death of somebody that was close to me,
that's a little different.
It's totally different. Yeah, you know, it's totally different to this person. It's like, oh, that's just a dead body. That's, you know, whatever. Not to be callous, but that's whatever to, like, somebody that you have an emotional connection, whether it be kind of like tenuous and crappy.
I'm not saying this guy wasn't a ghoul. I mean, he may very well have been.
But it's hard to tell. There's such a spectrum there, right? Where it's like either, I mean, I don't know. But again, if it were the police who worked closely with him saying, I don't know, it seemed like he was really unaffected by it, it would seem like they would know what unaffected by it would mean.
Listen, the police were really after this guy too. So that's going to color some stuff.
People's recollections often change in retrospect.
True.
You know, quite often.
Yeah, that's fair.
And again, it's hard to say. I mean, people act differently in situations like this. So hard to say if that means much of anything, but that was definitely counted as kind of a reason to be a little suspicious of him. But anyway, in the end, there was really no evidence of murder, so it was declared a suicide, and the whole thing was dropped. But of course, you know, the in-laws didn't forget it.
Of course not. Their daughter died.
And so the father-in-law did call the police, and that's when, of course, he got on their radar. And they did a little research into him. It turned out they found that he likes, apparently, violent pornography, which I'm not so sure what that means. That could mean somebody's...
That means it could, yeah, that's
it's a whole range. It's a whole range of things.
This is pre-internet, remember? So it's not as if they can check your browsing history. You buy it. In that day and age, it would be a tape.
Yeah, I guess.
So he might have had two pornos, one of them was pretty rough and tumble.
Maybe,
right.
Yeah.
But, and then that's where I would say, like, in an internet age, right, like, we all do that, like, click through, right? Where you just, like, find yourselves in this, like...
In the spiral.
Oh, my God. Why was I looking at that? That was awful. Yeah. What is going on? But in this day and age, like, that was, you would have to seek that out.
Well, not maybe. Maybe like I've
I mean,
got,
probably.
Listen, I have seen plenty of porno VHS tapes, and they don't always give away that they are all about bondage and beating.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
They may look like the run-of-the-mill naked people going at it, and then you get home, and you're like, oh, God, I paid $40 for this, and they don't let you return the tape.
I'm so glad that you've just admitted spending $40 on
that. I have no idea what a VHS used it. I just stole them. I don't know what they cost.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, I don't know if they maybe found some porn in his possessions when they searched his place.
Who knows?
Or maybe they just talked to associates and found this stuff out. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it might be, too. I don't know. If they did find some porn tapes in his house, did they find one or two, or did they find 50?
Fox Mulder level collection,
Yeah. I mean,
didn't he also like to engage with prostitutes?
He did. He did. He was at, he actually when he was when he spoke to police, they asked him if he knew Catherine or any of the other prostitutes, and he said he'd only done it once, and that was after he had an argument with his wife and things were kind of bad, so he'd gone to a prostitute once. But when they showed his picture along with some other suspected perps to the prostitutes in the area down there, and a bunch of them, like four dozen, picked his picture out.
Wow.
So apparently it turns out he was kind of a regular down there. He kind of lied to them. But
those women really knew who he was.
They apparently did, yeah.
And that makes it, that really does point the finger at him. Well, if all these people are saying, oh, yeah, no, he's down here all the time.
Well, it doesn't point the finger, but sort of a finger.
A finger.
Yeah.
And it puts him in proximity to, say her name?
Catherine. Yeah. It puts him in the area where she was known to hang out.
Yeah.
Obviously, the police don't like being lied to. Cops are very, they're very twitchy about that kind of thing.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
They don't seem to feel that they have to tell me the truth. I call the FBI and ask them for information. They won't tell me squat.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know. The FBI agent that's assigned to watch me through my camera has been, like, pretty sad lately, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, they have to keep cycling in new ones for me because they either get committed or they commit suicide.
Yeah,
because they're bored out of their minds.
Oh, my God. All this guy does is talk to his freaking cat. That's it. The FBI equivalent of Siberia is having to listen to me. But he was arrested, and when they found all this stuff about him, he was arrested in December 1984. His house was searched. They did find a knife.
Oh, my God.
I know.
A knife?
What the hell?
No!
What was he doing with a knife?
No.
Yeah, and
no respectable human owns a knife.
I know. I wouldn't own a knife.
No. Nor would I.
I have one, but it's designated only to cut up produce.
Yeah.
It's a tiny little paring knife, isn't it?
Yeah, my philosophy is
Of course it is, you freak.
There's just nothing.
It's a giant knife for cutting potatoes. Knife?
It's just a weapon of murder. In my opinion, there is nothing you can do with a knife that you cannot do with a gun. So, I mean, why would you have a knife?
Really?
Yeah. Why?
Joe shoots all of his produce.
I was going to say, this is why we don't eat at Joe's house ever.
Yeah.
There may be some bullet fragments in there. Sorry, everyone.
I got to go prepare the steak, guys. Boom, 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 boom. Yeah. Okay, it's tenderized. All right, let's go. But there really actually was not any evidence. So, you know, even the knife, the incriminatory knife, there was no evidence. They had to let him go. And maybe he did it, maybe not. So, again, let's summarize the arguments for his guilt. He'd probably come into contact with Catherine at some point, you know, since he had hung out down there. He might have.
Because they were in the same neighborhoods looking to exchange the same things.
Yeah, and so he may well have had done business with her even. As a pathologist, he would have the tools and the know-how to chop her body up.
Yeah.
True.
He was an expert on strangulation, which might have been the cause of death, although we don't really know that. I mean, it could have been blunt force trauma or a gunshot to the head. I don't know, again, if he's the expert, the world's leading expert on strangulation, does that mean you have to strangle your murder victims, or would you consider it wiser to shoot him in the head? How would that work?
Knowing how to do something and wanting to do something are two very different things. It's just saying that he knows all about something doesn't mean that he's also the one that turns around and then slices them up into itsy bitsy pieces.
Yeah, like I know people who are butchers, for example. You know, that doesn't mean they're murderers, you know.
I was going to say that I went to school for costume design. My freshman year, we were doing a play that required the distressing of a butcher's apron. And my costume design professor, for whatever reason, was like, hey, can you distress this? And I was like, sure. She's like, I want some blood spatter on there. And I was like, okay. and like did some, and she was like, how do you know what jugular splatter looks like, though? And I was like, I don't. I was just putting blood splatter on there. I'm sorry. And she was I'm never going to ask you to do that ever again. I'm sorry.
No, what you should have just said is, I had no idea. I just started cutting on the homeless dude. This is what came out, you know?
Yeah, that's why she's not in that industry anymore.
Yeah, well, next time you know what to say, all right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, and there was one other thing is that they talked, of course, they're going to always talk to everybody, you know, colleagues, acquaintances, friends, whatever.
Right.
A lot of people, apparently, including some of the women down the red light district, said they didn't like him. They thought he was kind of scary and creepy. But then again, you know.
I feel like you can't 100% discount that gut feeling that people have about people, you know?
Yeah,
you can't rely on it when you're being pushed on by the police about, is this guy a total scumbag?
Yeah. Well, but I think it's like it's that weird, like you can use that to fuel who you might investigate.
Yeah,
you
know, unintentionally influencing.
Yeah, I mean, I think if everybody who you're interviewing says, no, he seemed really creepy and weird, you might go with that suspect more.
It would make sense. It would probably influence your investigation just a little bit. If all these people have a bad feeling about this guy.
The problem with Teed Harm is he's what I would consider a victim of what somebody wrote to us today in our timeline, not when this podcast released timeline, is the phenomenon of locking in and locking out.
Yeah.
Locking in on your subject and therefore locking out all other information that might prove that that's wrong.
Yeah, all they care about is whatever little factoid fits their theory.
Right. Oh, this, beautiful. That? No, that doesn't matter. This, yes. No, that's that. The rest of that is all garbage. Get it out of here.
I know. I mean, because that's, and definitely, I tend to do the same thing. And like even on our podcast, I tend to pay more focused attention on the things that confirm the theory that I have.
Yeah.
And of course,
it's confirmation bias.
Yeah. And if I get enough information, then I will change up my theory. I'm not that bad,
sure.
I hope. But, you know,
yeah.
Definitely, you know, things that come to my attention that make me right.
I recently found an infographic that I'll share with you guys later, but it was all of these different kind of biases that people have that are underlying.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot.
And I was really interested in kind of think about, like, apparently people also give bias to, like, if the information is more recent, they give more weight to it, which is crazy.
Makes no sense.
Because it's breaking news.
But that's true. Apparently, you know, and then also you look for the information that will confirm what you believe.
Yeah.
So it's confirmation bias.
And there are certainly areas where the most recent information is the best, like, say, market economics or real estate, you know, obviously. But,
or like
murder, not so much.
Physics or science,
All right,
but
so,
maybe murder, maybe.
So according to, we're talking about our vampire doctor.
Our mad vampire doctor. Yeah, let's see. What else we got? Besides him being creepy, what else? Of course, the body parts were found close to where he worked.
And every good idiot knows, dump the body parts by your job.
Yeah, just on your way to work. Just chuck them out the car window.
Yeah. That's what I do with apple cores all the time.
Yeah.
No, totally.
So we got
don't
like,
do that.
So that's
do it
the
all the time.
Yeah. The Weekly World News, so you've probably heard of them. They're a pretty respectable tabloid. And they, in April 1988, they published an article about him. And they came up with some extra information. They called him the Mad Vampire Doc. And you guys have seen the article.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It said that he had committed at least 6 other, quote, vampire slayings, unquote, besides Catherine. And they were definitely vampire. He had a secret, according to them, he had a secret stash of 20 human brains in his freezer at home.
So I appreciate that you were including
brains?
This for the comic relief of, oh my God, the Weekly World News. But this is just such slanderous garbage.
It's awful.
Oh yeah, it is. But I thought I'd just toss it in so you get a sort of a flavor for how nuts this case became.
Oh, no, it is a great example of how far this thing went off the rails.
Yeah, and I've read comments from certain Swedish citizens who say they consider this case to have been a national embarrassment for the way the police handled the trial and everything. And then the way they built their case against Teet. And somebody else we're going to find out about here in a moment.
Oh, yeah, well, let's go there.
Yeah, here's what the Weekly World News said about this. About Catherine, they said he lured her back home or to his morgue and then decapitated her with a power saw and then invited a friend over to, quote, join him in a banquet of human flesh and blood, unquote.
And then they retired to their separate coffins.
Yeah, apparently. and then they did, about a year later, they published another article saying that one of Teet's victims had risen from the dead, was on the brink of becoming a vampire like him.
Because she was a zombie, but she's going to upgrade to vampire status.
Yeah, apparently.
She had enough hit points.
Yeah, and so... So he's a vampire. Okay, we got that. All right, so, well, let's go on to our next theory.
Yeah.
Next perp, or perp, so this perp
this
is a sec.
Paro-perp.
Paro-perp. This is Tiet Harm and Tomas Algen.
This is like a segue theory.
Yeah, so nobody seems to be saying that Algen committed the murders by himself, but some people have said, like, for example, the World News, Weekly World News, thinks that he was sort of an evil sidekick to Tiet Harm.
Kind of sidekick?
Yeah, that kind of sidekick.
We done it. Actually, we done it.
So they knew each other. They had worked together. They were both doctors. Algen was a general practitioner. And they had worked together for about a year and a half at a hospital in Stockholm. And so they knew each other. I don't think they were besties, but they had known each other from work and stuff. I think
they might have been blood brothers.
Oh, I think they were.
Okay. Yeah, all right. All right. Come on. Let's get back to serious land.
So if you remember that article I mentioned a few minutes ago, Tomas Algen is the friend who was invited over to feast on human flesh and blood.
Right.
He was the dude. Yeah, and it's funny, in the article he managed to misspell not just his first name, but his last name also.
They misspelled it?
They misspelled both names. Oh, yeah, first and last. Yeah.
Well, that's a way to avoid getting a charge of slander. What?
That's
it wasn't you we were talking about.
Yeah, yeah, we weren't talking about. I'm kind of surprised they didn't get sued for slander.
I bet you they did. Their lawyer said, don't spell that guy's name correctly.
Maybe that's what
it was. So people will correct it in their minds, but we cannot directly be accused of doing that.
Yeah. Well, now,
then again, how the Weekly World News isn't constantly getting slander suits, I have no idea.
Magic.
That boy, at this point, should own that place.
Yeah.
Magic. Mayhem. Anyway.
I honestly don't know. That's a question for another episode. But,
so why does Tomas
Algen? When Tiet was arrested in 84, the papers published that a young doctor had been arrested as a suspect.
Okay.
Tomas Algen was separated from his wife, Christina, at this time, and they had a young daughter who was about 2 years old, who is unnamed in the press, so we will call her, what do you think?
Jane?
Yeah, Jane Doe?
Sally.
Jane Doe. Sally?
Jane Doe.
You like Jane Doe?
Jane Doe,
okay. Jane Doe works.
I'll call her Jane Doe. So they were, as I said, separated. So as you know, these things often can turn a little bit ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Separations and divorces? Oh, hell yeah.
Especially when children are involved, unfortunately.
So that'll notch it up.
Yeah, so she had been claiming that Thomas had molested Jane Doe, the daughter, and he had been investigated for this.
And I'm sorry, how old was the daughter again?
She was, I think at the time that the actual allegations were made, she was about a year and a half old.
Okay.
And then by the time...
17 months, 18 months?
Yeah, 17, 18 months. And I think by the time that Tiet was arrested in December 1984...
So that would have been
she would have been about
maybe
two.
Okay.
About two.
But yeah, sorry. I'm sure you said that before. I just...
Yeah.
To clarify...
Let's be totally clear.
He was accused
here.
Of molesting his two-year-old daughter.
Yeah, he was. Okay. And
they found no evidence of it,
by
the way.
Yeah, police investigated. They decided there was no evidence. They decided the charges were unfounded. And then they decided...
And it was just another ugly divorce.
Yeah, no. They decided to take no further action. But then, after Tiet got arrested, Christina hears that a young doctor had been arrested in this incredibly notorious murder. She called the police and just said, "Hey, did you arrest Tiet Harm? Is he the guy?" And the police apparently confirmed it.
Wow, that's a good.
That's
wow, they are just really bad. 1,000 here. There's so many things that go. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, because apparently...
I don't know. I mean, like, a little bit. I feel like if somebody called and... Like, if I called the police...
It is an investigation, and she has... As a public citizen, she has no... There's no reason to disclose that to her until such time as she is proven to be involved.
Sure.
Yeah.
Fair. But, like, if I called and I was like, "Hey, did you arrest Steve in this?" They would probably
are you asking? What is your involvement? What's your relationship? Like,
sure.
There would be a whole bunch of stuff, and you'd have to prove good reason.
But
to
maybe,
know.
Maybe she said, "Well, I know his accomplice," and they said, "Then yes."
Oh,
yeah. Maybe that's what it was. Is maybe
because if I called up and I said, "Hey, did you arrest Steve for this?" and they were like, "Why do you know?" and I was like, "Well, because I know Joe the accomplice." They were like, "Then yeah, we did." Who's Joe?
Well, since we've left Logic Town, I'm going to take a nap. Let me know when we get back into the real world.
We're about
world.
A page and a half away.
Whatever the circumstances of this whole thing were, the police essentially confirmed it to her. And we don't know. Like I said, Devin, she might have called in and said, I've got information you might need. And yada, yada. We don't know.
She fingers the ex as being involved.
Yeah. And it turns out she had met Teed a few years before when Tomas brought him home for dinner, and apparently she had taken an instant dislike to him. And so she was not.
Because he asked
well
if he could bathe in the meatloaf.
Yeah, probably, yeah. Yeah, or maybe he spent the whole dinner just talking about strangulation or something. I'm not saying that he necessarily had a winning personality.
No.
But
probably not if this many people didn't like him.
Yeah, I don't think it was right in December 84, but not too long after that, Christina went to the police and said that her daughter, Jane Doe, who was 18 months old at the time of the murder, was saying stuff that indicated to her that she was present when Catherine's body had been cut up. And
this,
was cut up by
this
Thomas
part of the story
Algen.
Is this thing just keeps going further and further off the rails for me. Like just
yeah, I mean this is not a this investigation did not really go well. I would say
yeah, and it's hard for me with like 2-year-olds. They say, I mean, like they're
they
such show
stuff, huh?
Kids say the darndest things.
They yes, repeat they what mommy and daddy say all
well,
the time.
But it's not necessarily that. It's just like there's a lot of, and we haven't done shows on this per se because I know you
how for
you
good reason
feel about this situation. But like, there's a lot of stuff that kids say that like would lead one to believe that like reincarnation is real, right?
Yeah.
Because sometimes like kids are talking like at length and in like incredible detail about stuff that they should have no understanding of whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that they have actually
an understanding.
Right. That doesn't mean they've actually experienced that in their current life.
Mm-hmm.
Kids have a lot of active imaginations, or maybe it is this weird whatever. I mean, we at some point could probably talk for at least 3 hours about what that sort of thing means, but I'm not willing to ever say that like what a 2-year-old is saying accurately reflects what they've experienced in life.
No,
probably not.
You know?
No,
probably not. But
you can't use that as testimony and proof.
No,
ever.
Well, most of it's just jibber jabber.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's kind of the way I would look at it too. But apparently the police kind of bought it. Yeah. Apparently they, by the way, according to Jane Doe, the child, Teet Harm, was also present. It was not just Thomas.
It was
Thomas and Teet who were chopping up the body.
Okay.
So the double T's were cutting her up.
Yeah.
The little girl was there.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not sure what to make of it, except I think this is probably the ugliest divorce of all time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think.
Probably not the ugliest, but it's one of the.
Yeah, it's up there. Yeah. Or maybe Christina sincerely believed that she was accurately reporting everything that her daughter was saying. But again, because of her age, I really have a hard time believing
it. I really feel like she was saying things that probably led her daughter to repeat things that spun this whole thing off.
Well, that's the problem with kids and this kind of thing.
It's hard to tell, especially
planted,
at 2. Yeah.
Often it's planted.
Or
yeah.
It's maybe not, but I mean.
Unintentionally a lot of times.
Yeah.
But
I mean, like even adults can be misled. You know, you can say to an adult like, well, didn't you see that person with a white hat?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And we talked, again,
and
this
suddenly,
is like a great.
Oh, yeah, the guy had a white hat.
Yeah, this is a great example, again, of
yes.
like what we were talking about in the last episode.
Implanted
memories. With Amy, it was like, you know, you're going around, you're saying, did you see this girl? You know, she might have been with bikers. She was a vegetarian. And people like, oh, yeah,
I remember
her.
She did buy vegetarian
Yeah,
suits.
And she
yeah.
was with 2 bikers. That's weird, right? I mean, you can. Human memory is such a weird thing.
Oh, it is. It is.
Especially
you know.
At 2 years old.
Okay. So
I definitely misremember stuff. But anyway,
so we've got a 2-year-old girl. How do they prove that, or how do they decide that what this kid is saying?
Well, they enlisted a child psychologist and a child psychiatrist to examine her, and listen to her testimony and stuff. And they apparently decided their professional opinion was her evidence was credible.
Okay.
Now, how they arrived at that conclusion, I don't really know, but.
But I tend to, I mean, you know.
But, you know, that's. That
I know
obviously.
You guys don't, but I do.
Yeah, I'm staying out of the rest of that.
That's
yeah.
not enough of a, not enough evidence.
Wasn't there some,
of,
like, photo development
there was,
situation,
there was another thing
too?
That happened, but this didn't happen until fall 87 when this couple came forward.
So this is, wait. 87. The murder happens in 84.
Yeah, so 3 years after.
Okay.
Yeah, 3 years after.
I just want to make sure I got that timeline right.
Yeah, and they owned this Photoshop that was, I think, it's somewhere near the Karolinska Institute. And they came forward and told the police that they had developed a roll of film and printed photographs. And the roll had turned out to have images of a chopped up human body on it, which is...
When did they say they developed that film?
That would have been around like summer 1984.
Okay. So about the time.
Yeah, right about that time. They said that they and their employees were appalled and disgusted by the
But they did it anyway.
But they didn't report it to the police.
Why?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, that's my first thing is if you are, especially when you're in the days of analog film processing, God, we're doing this again.
Yeah.
It's a thing that it was a known fact that if you saw, oh, wait, you're making porn, we have to report you. Yeah. Oh, look, you have what appears to be a dead human being. We have to report you. You just don't go, so that was really gross, and don't do that again.
Yeah.
Like, that's not the way that works.
Yeah, I don't know what exactly why they just sort of let this thing slide and didn't tell the cops. Apparently what happened is it was two young men brought the roll of film in for development and told them that There's going to be some unsettling stuff on these pictures, but this is part of a top secret investigation. You know, so please don't tell anybody, and please just, you know, don't look at the pictures or anything like that. And there's no need to call the police, you know. And so from their point of view, if it would have been top secret if they had actually killed somebody and chopped up the body, right? That'd be a big secret I'd want to keep.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, I wouldn't take the film to be developed either.
No, I learned how to develop my own film.
I feel like, police labs usually have people who are capable of that. That's crazy.
That's the other thing. Is what top, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you would think that they would have their own lab if it was actually a police investigation.
Boy, I'm not a fan of any of
that. Yeah, you go down to the police lab. Hey, Hans, so this is film we shot from this scene. Can you develop it for us? Okay, no big deal. Yeah. Hans doesn't give a crap because he sees that stuff all the time.
Yeah, for sure.
You don't go to the public photo mart.
Also, Hans knows you work for the police.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He knows that you work there.
Yes.
The only thing I can think of is, maybe you decided that your department is full of corrupt cops and so you got to go like off the grid to get this stuff taken care of. That makes no sense.
No.
We never heard from these guys exactly any stories about like where they had, why they had to go outside normal channels to get this film developed. They never said anything about that, so we can discount that. So of course, naturally, they wanted to know who these two men were.
Right.
The police did, and they put I think Thomas Olgan and I don't know if they put Teet Harm in the same lineup at the same time or different lineups or what, but apparently they picked Thomas Olgan out of the police lineup as one of the few young men who had brought the film in.
Wow.
And apparently they also picked out Teet, although they weren't quite as sure about him.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Had there been news coverage of these guys?
Oh, I'm sure there had been plenty.
Yeah, okay,
But apparently this is what they've got for their case. They've got a little kid who was 18 months old, who, you know.
IDs the whole thing.
And then they've got these people that say they brought in this roll of film. And so
5 years later.
That's about the gist of their case here. But they were arrested October 87, 1987. They were convicted. Verdict was thrown out because of jury misconduct. Because
it was a media circus and they were all blabbing to the media.
They were talking to the press when they shouldn't have been. And so there was essentially kind of a mistrial. I don't know if they call it a mistrial in Sweden or not. But there was a big outcry about the mistrial. So there was a second trial.
Okay.
And then they were acquitted, which seems about right to me because the evidence against them, even if they were the killers, I'm sorry.
So thin.
I can't support sending anybody to prison on the basis of that.
No. I mean, it's tough, right? Because like what we know about both of them is that like both of them have been accused of being kind of like horrible.
Yeah.
Humans in their personal life. And also,
or at least possibly.
Or possibly, right? But I said accused.
They're accused.
Of,
you're right.
They're
okay.
accused of being like kind of horrible people in their personal life.
Yeah.
And like also maybe had these pictures.
Yeah.
But that's it.
That's about it. And you know,
it's tough because I feel like both, right?
You know, I know.
I don't know what I would do on the
thing
jury.
Think about having pictures like that. Like I have a friend who's a really good guy who did a tour in Iraq a while back.
Yeah, and we talked about this before.
He showed me a bunch of pictures that he brought back from there, and some of them are frankly very disturbing.
Yeah, we talked about this last week.
Grody as hell, you know. Yeah. And he's a nice guy, but he has these pictures, And it's not because he's some sort of weird disaster porn freak. I think he just wants to document his time over there. And I think
that feels different, though.
Well, I think you probably get used to that kind of stuff, too. You see enough of it.
Sure.
And so for these guys, you know, having a, you know, all sorts of weird crime scene pictures is not that weird at all for them.
So wait. Speaking of crime scene pictures, was it Teat that was known to send stuff unsolicited to people?
Yeah, he did. He was supposedly sent like post-mortem reports with photos and everything to unsolicited to people.
To people he knew?
Well, and I'm not sure, you know, what kind of people. I mean, if you send them like to say your people he knew, friends or whatever, but again, I'm not sure what the context was because, like, for example, if it's a fellow mortician or doctor, or not, excuse me, not mortician, but a fellow forensic
pathologist
person or police person or something, and you just send them something like, wow, this is really interesting. Check out page 7 or something like that.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know. Or it could mean he was sort of really,
sending it to his in-laws.
Or yeah, I don't know. Or it could mean to him it was kind of the equivalent of porn. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or it might have just been showing stuff of professional interest to other people. I really don't know. Again, the case against these guys is just not great. Especially the one thing I didn't mention was just the whole idea. Well, you sort of touched on it.
Oh, yeah.
The whole idea.
We really went into that.
You're going to have your 18-year-old kid in front of you.
18-month-old kid,
excuse me.
Yeah.
When you're carving up a corpse and chopping the head off. I find that hard to believe.
I agree.
For one, they don't sit still.
Yeah.
They don't sit still. They're going to be running around while you're trying to do stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so again, even though the case against them was not all that great, that doesn't necessarily mean they're innocent. I think most likely they didn't do it. There was probably some of this was grudges. I mean, the in-laws definitely had a grudge against them. Obviously,
yeah.
The ex-wife
who alleged child abuse and all this had a grudge against her husband Thomas Ogden. And so it's hard to believe that the police gave that much weight and credibility to these people. And so I gotta rule these two kind of out as suspects.
Everything feels so circumstantial and mismanaged against them that I can't, with a good clear conscience, say, oh yeah, I still think they did it.
It's tough though, again, right? Because it's like I do feel like they're like not good humans.
Well, I'm
maybe,
not.
But
that
don't
doesn't
necessarily
mean jack squat.
Yeah. Totally.
I mean, being a dirtbag doesn't mean that you're a murdering killer who dices people up in your spare time.
So are there other theories here?
Well, there's a few. There's, you know, another theory would be, well, it's just somebody else entirely that we just haven't heard of. I mean, we've got these suspects that we've named, three of them so far, but could have been another serial killer.
So prescient.
Yeah, I know. that's kind of just punting, I know. But, you know, really, obviously, it could be. We don't know. We never will know, actually.
We don't have any other theories of people who were firm.
Okay.
No,
okay.
Not at all. No, this is just, you know, some unknown Jack the Ripper kind of guy. But of course, the statute of limitations ran out in 2010. I think the original statute of limitations
8 years ago
was,
for us, yeah.
Yeah, it was 25 years for murder in Sweden. Apparently they've changed that. Now there is no statute of limitations.
Which I feel like makes sense.
That kind of does make
sense. Like there are certain crimes where I'm like, you know what? That should never run out.
Yeah.
If we could prove
there's
that
an expiration date on
there should
crime
never be really.
Yeah, probably
certain crimes.
Not. Probably not.
Maybe like you steal a candy bar when you're 8, like fine.
Oh yeah,
but
certain
maybe
crimes.
You like murder somebody and chop up their body. Maybe you never get to get away from
Wait,
that.
Wait, are you saying I'm off the hook for all those candy bars I stole as a kid?
I'm not saying that.
Damn.
Well, your body still has to deal with that. Not to mention your conscience, but
my conscience was fine with it. I was just like, I don't have to duck the law anymore.
Yeah,
sorry.
But yeah, there
too
are
bad you admitted it.
Yeah. Well, I'm just gonna keep not filing my taxes. They'll never find me. I'm safe.
Say, aha.
Okay, good luck,
dude. Yeah, my only quibble about trying a case that's older than say 25 years is that memories are there, and say if they want to accuse me, how am I gonna come up with an alibi? Where are they going to find any reliable witnesses? So, in theory,
trying
something that old is so hard.
Sure, but the way that trials seem to go, especially of like murder or something of that kind of seriousness go these days, juries seem to require, at least in the last 10 or so years, scientific evidence, right? So they seem to require DNA. Yeah. They seem to require kind of forensic evidence of some kind. So I mean, granted, they are fallible, but I would suspect that no reasonable prosecutor would bring a case against somebody, especially one as serious as this, without some kind of really solid forensic evidence.
Well, there is.
And that seems to not be as... Sure, I mean, like, there is some fallibility there.
There is
certainly
not just fallibility. There is outright prosecutorial abuse.
And absolutely, yeah.
Happen.
We talk about,
not
like...
Not usually, not typically, of
right.
course.
And we talk about,
happen.
You know, like, bite mark forensic evidence.
No,
that's
no.
not
yeah.
real, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of forensic evidence that's not... That's actively being proven.
Stuff that we used to consider infallible, or at least highly reliable, like hair analysis.
Infallible.
Has been, sorry.
It's totally.
Has totally been shown to be, well, not quite so perfect as we thought it was.
Totally.
I mean, even
but
DNA
I feel like if somebody, but I do
was.
Feel like if somebody were like, listen, within like, you know, 1,000 to 1, this person's DNA was found on this body that was chopped up, you might want to at least launch an investigation.
No, sure. You want to have a look-see, sure.
Yeah. Without saying like
Robert Durst.
Right. But I mean, without saying like, you know, listen, it was 25 years ago, so we don't really care anymore. Like maybe just.
Yeah. No, sometimes you want to get an answer. Yeah. I totally understand that. And that's, since we are in the business of solving unsolved mysteries, obviously, you know, I'm pro solving that mystery.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like I said, sometimes it's a little unfair when that much time has gone by. It can be, there can be an element
on circumstantial evidence alone.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But anyway, to wrap up our case here, apparently in 2010, I think we mentioned this earlier, the prosecutor general did apply for a search warrant to obtain those tissue samples that had been collected and they were being held
at Stan.
Yeah, for Stan, they were being held at the Karolinska Hospital. And so apparently they wanted to see, there was the original bag, there was like a blue towel next to the bag that had some hairs on it, which were saved by the police.
Okay.
And so what they wanted to do was, I guess, compare DNA in the tissue samples from Stan to the DNA in those hairs and see if they could actually, you know, establish a connection.
Not that it would be 100% proof, but it'd be something.
Well, you know, it might be enough to actually resolve the case to everybody's satisfaction.
Sure.
And as we mentioned, nothing ever happened. I've not heard anything about how their testing went.
Yeah.
And
maybe,
you know,
it's still in the queue.
Yeah, maybe. You know, and so it's, you know, I want to give everybody the benefit of the doubt and believe the best of everyone. Although
that's nice of you.
Yeah, no, but well, except YouTube. But,
yeah, but, totally.
No, but it has
so
been
humble.
Mentioned. I'm not the first person who's mentioned this. Considering their conduct in the case, considering the two lives were destroyed, if it turned out that Stan's DNA matched those hairs found there, after everything they did to Tete Harm and Thomas Olligan, then, oh my God, I could see where there might be a little embarrassment factor.
Well, here's
there.
The worst part is that Tete and Thomas both sued the state.
And they were turned down.
And they were told, no, you can't do this.
Yeah, too freaking bad. They had their medical licenses taken away
from them. Yeah, they have gainful employment that they are, you know, highly trained for. They cannot practice.
They cannot,
in Sweden, at least.
Yeah. Or probably anywhere.
I kind of have a feeling they probably would have a hard time getting jobs most places.
I think the stink has followed them everywhere. I have no idea what those guys do for a living or how they survive. But
selling their story to tabloids.
Yeah, maybe. But and so it might be kind of tough.
Yes.
It might be. You could even see it from like not wanting to pay out millions of dollars for a wrongful prosecution or anything like that.
Yeah.
Because they might just sort of sit on the results if it turned out the results, you know, actually exonerated these
two.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's what happened. I think for me, Stan is the obvious best suspect, even though he's, you know, I don't think there's enough evidence to even send him away unless the DNA test did come back positive.
Yeah, and even then, it's kind of like you have to then be able to actually link that towel to the crime.
Yeah, well,
you know, because
if it's
like
right next to the bag.
Well, like even then, though, I mean, I would say, you know, the chances of somebody just having the really, really serious, unfortunate luck.
Unless
of
Stan got
a
haircut
towel
next to the bag of body parts, unbeknownst to him.
I would say that's enough for me, probably.
That would be enough to shut this case down.
And he died in 87, too.
He died in 87,
so,
of course.
So I guess maybe, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, fine. Like,
yeah, and the case, it's, of course, the statute of limitations expired, so nobody can be, he can't be prosecuted for it, even if they can match his DNA.
Yeah,
they can't,
I don't know.
And
do
revive
anything.
Him.
Yeah.
But at least, you know, at least for these other people that have been accused, at least they would get some resolution.
You would think, I think, you know, again, that whole like trial by public opinion is rough to ever overcome.
It's that, that's one of the reasons too why it's I think important for the police when they're investigating somebody to kind of you know, keep a lid on the whole thing.
Yeah.
So you don't destroy people's lives.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, that's enough of editorializing for me. That is our story. The murder of Katharina.
By the mad vampire.
By the mad vampire doc. Yes, exactly. You're probably going to be wanting to. Oh, did you guys have any more theorizing before I
wrap
up? Yeah, there?
Listen, I'm not going to steer into Weekly World News garbage zone. So,
well, we will. I know that all of our listeners are going to want to read that article. So we will post a link to it on our website along with links to some
really?
Other stuff.
Can't they just go to Murderpedia and see the crap fest that is this story?
Oh, yeah, they put a lot of crap fest. The Murderpedia's got some really ludicrous stuff on there.
Their bot was seriously drunk that day.
Yeah, Murderpedia took a little credibility hit for me, at least when I read their page on these guys, on this murder. I used to think they were somewhat reliable, not perfect, but, you know, somewhat. Nah, I don't think so.
All right.
But anyway,
So
we'll have links on our website, which is thinkingsidewayspodcast.com, where you can download the episodes, you can buy merch, t-shirts and mugs and all sorts of good stuff. And read some of our research that we will link to. Also, of course, you're probably going to want to send us an email about this. Of course you will. So our email address is thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com. Oh, and what else? We're on Facebook and other social media outlets. We're on Facebook where we have a page and a group. So like the page, join the group, and answer the questions. They're easy. There's like two of them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of activity going on there. We're also on Twitter where we are Thinking Sideways. Lots of great stuff there, including pictures of my cats.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. And what else?
Instagram.
It's not photos.
Photogram.
Photogram.
Instagram. We are on Instagram now where we are Thinking Sideways Podcast.
Yes.
Don't go to the Thinking Sideways only, guys, because they are up to no good. Who knows what they're doing?
Who knows?
But, yeah. They took
just follow it from our page. It's way easy
that way.
Get to the right one.
True.
A very, very good way. Also, we have a subreddit, Thinking Sideways. Whether there's any good activity out there, by the way, lately? Devin? No? Maybe
always.
A little bit.
It's so far in the future. Why do you ask this question?
Yeah, who knows?
Good point.
She's not really a time traveler, even though we accuse her of it.
Even though everybody thinks I'm the doctor.
Yeah. Okay. So there's stuff going on there. What else? I mentioned that you can find our episodes on our website. There's other places you can find them, too, believe it or not. We're on iTunes. Where you can also, besides finding the episodes, you can subscribe. You can also leave a review, leave a rating. We like high ratings, like that would be a 5. That's our preference. also, you can find us on streaming services like Stitcher and some of the other ones I can name, but I'll just leave it at Stitcher. All right, well, that's it for this week. So until next week, ciao.
Bye.
Heads off to you.
Bye.
Ugh. Oh.